Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Backcountry in Des Moines, a boutique that believes, as Twain said, travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness. Located at 2702 Beaver Avenue, Backcountry curates clothing and gear for people who travel in mind now and in person soon.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we do love our trees, but it can be challenging to figure out what to plant in the shade that they create. This hour, we'll talk about a wide variety of plants that can grow in full or partial shade, thinking beyond hostas this hour. With me, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Hello, Cindy.
Good morning.
And Richard Giron is also here, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
DNR Forester Mark Vitosh will be joining us a little bit later on this hour. And of course, we'll also be taking your calls. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. So, Cindy, we know that hostas grow really well in the shade. We see a lot of hostas in a lot of people's yards.
Right.
We're going to think beyond that, but I think first we have to talk about what shade is, because a lot of us want to optimistically diminish the amount of impact that I think partial shade might have on our yards. So let's talk about that.
Right. So we have like the Iowa Master Gardener program has kind of divided sun and shade into four categories. So full sun is more than 6 hours of direct light a day, usually that, you know, midday sun and, you know, just very little shade whatsoever. Then there's part sun, which gets anywhere from about 4 to 6 hours of direct light. And then we go down to part shade, which technically gets about 2 to 4 hours of direct light, but maybe early in the morning or late in the afternoon. And then full shade might get some filtered light, very little direct light, usually less than 2 hours. So it does spend most of that site, spends most of that time in some sort of shady condition.
And when you talk about early morning or late afternoon light, is there a qualitative difference between the kind of light that you get at those times of day as opposed to that hot midday sun?
I think it is often less intense. The quality of the light can be a little bit different, but from the plant standpoint, it's that intensity of light because it's not as strong. It tends to be less impactful. So for full sun plants, it's not enough, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But with the part shade or the shade-loving plants, it might be just enough to spur a little bit more blooms, or to make that site just a little bit better, but it may not be enough to grow that lawn underneath the trees. Yeah.
All right. We've all seen that ailing lawn that you're talking about.
Right.
So, of course,
right.
a lot of the shade is created by trees. Of course, our houses create shade and buildings and walls and all kinds of other things, too. But given that trees are what's created the shade, are there trees that can also grow in the shade?
There are a few that do pretty well in part sun to part shade. Things like redbud, serviceberry, pagoda dogwood, they do okay. They're usually on kind of an edge, a woodland edge to some extent. So they will do well in that kind of part shade situation where they're getting some direct light, maybe just that morning or late afternoon light, because they tend to bloom better when they have that. So there's a few, and they're smaller trees, so they can be more of that kind of understory type of tree and do well in that kind of situation. But it's a really pretty limited number if you're talking trees underneath other trees.
All right. Well, how about shrubs?
Shrubs, there's plenty. Some of my favorite right now are bottle brush buckeye is starting to bloom. It's a summer blooming shrub. It's a big one that will get 10 feet tall, so it's not a small shrub.
So this has to be tall shade.
Yeah, it does. I mean, because some shade shrubs tend to be more in that kind of 5 foot range. But yeah, bottle brush buckeye slowly over time will get taller than you will.
All right. And you know what? Now that I just looked up a picture, I've seen quite a bit of bottle brush buckeye around. I didn't know that's what it was called, but it is quite lovely.
It is lovely, and it blooms at an odd time. So it usually is blooming in July in my garden, which is, you know, when things are maybe shrubs, most shrubs are kind of done. So I like that it blooms at a different time. And the hummingbirds and butterflies and pollinators, they find it as well, even in the shade, because it's got this 10-inch bottle brush-like white flower, which is kind of cool. So, yeah.
All right. What are some of the other shrub options?
Another shrub option might be something called white fringe tree. It blooms in the spring. It's in the same family as ash. And so it has these kind of little strap-like white flowers that hang down. They're kind of interesting and cool, something a little different. Some other things to consider are caria, which is a smaller shrub with bright yellow flowers, and yellow really stands out in the shade. So it's a late spring, early summer bloomer. Another yellow flowering might be southern bush honeysuckle. This is not related to the honeysuckle. It's a Dirivella, something a little bit different. But it's another nice one that has yellow flowers, a little less showy than caria, but really indestructible. So it's a really tough.
Making clear that it's not honeysuckle, that means that this is not invasive?
This is not an invasive honeysuckle. Yeah. Okay. It's just got strapped with a bad name. So sorry about that. Maybe we should just call it Dirivella instead.
All right. We have no idea what you're talking about then, but that'll be okay.
It's a little bit harder to find, but it's a nice shrub that will tolerate that kind of part shade very well and still bloom well for you. And like I said, it's really adaptable and tough as nails. And sometimes we need that in shade because shade also poses sometimes it becomes a little bit dry under some certain trees. So the plants that grow in that shade also may have to be drought tolerant as well.
Okay. So they have to be really tough to do that.
They have to be tough. Yep. And then two other shrubs I'll mention. There's one called Fothergilla, which is another one with a very unfortunate name. But it has these bottle brush honey-scented flowers in spring. And if it is getting at least 2 to 4 hours of sun, morning or late afternoon, it has a really wonderful fall color. So fall color is something that's also pretty hard to get in a shrub or a perennial in the shade. So that's a nice kind of bonus.
All right.
And then clethora. This is called summer sweet. It's another one that has these elongated, more bottle brush-like flowers. It's blooming now in my garden. It's typically a smaller shrub, and also can have some nice fall color if it's getting a couple of hours of sun.
All right. What about evergreens?
There are some. The yews are pretty tough and indestructible. They do quite well in shade and part shade, even into full sun. Arborvitae are another one. If you can give them part shade, they do fairly well as well, or part sun. And then sometimes I think that there's a lot of dwarf conifers out there. There's some hemlocks that are dwarf conifers that do pretty well in some shady sites as well. A little harder to find again, but interesting to have, and important, I think, to have some of those evergreens even in a shady situation.
All right, well, we've talked so much about trees and shrubs. Now we're going to give the perennials some short shrift here, I'm afraid. But let's talk about perennials that are not hostas that do well in the shade.
There's a very long list. There's a lot of woodland natives that often bloom in the spring, like woodland phlox and bloodroot and shooting star, jack in the pulpit. All of these are great for spring blooming. And then I like to move into thinking about perennials, those that bloom maybe in the summer and into the fall. So coral bells are starting to bloom now. Bugbane or snake root is coming along this summer. There's a cardinal flower that has red blooms in the summer. And then turtle head will have pink flowers. And toad lily will be blooming in September. So when you think about perennials for the shade, this is what you should think about, is all of the flowers that are possible, and maybe starting with some of those woodland wildflowers in the spring and then continuing it throughout the summer and into fall, so that you almost always have something in bloom.
All right. And let's talk a little bit about ground covers, because, of course, that's the question that we get all the time. I can't grow grass in my shade. What can I grow that will cover the ground so I won't have a muddy patch?
Right. And so you can't. So ground covers are different than your lawn. So they're going to look a little bit different. But they are green, and they can be managed kind of like this kind of green space under trees, which kind of creates a cool effect. Some of the lowest growing ground covers are like vinca, that stay, you know, only a few inches tall. There's lily turf that looks like grass, but a taller grass. You don't mow it like grass. And then there's things like lily of the valley that you've probably seen, or someone in your family at some point had, that does really well in kind of shady areas and spreads pretty aggressively. And bugleweed is another one that always does pretty well in part shade, almost to full shade, and spreads, makes a nice carpet, and then has usually a nice bloom in the spring. So those are some of them. And then I guess one more ground cover that I like to mention is one called barrenwort, or epimedium. It's a slow spreading ground cover. So by definition, most ground covers spread very quickly. This one takes its time, and it's got a very delicate stem and kind of arrowhead leaf, and it just looks and acts a little more refined than other ground covers.
All right, and these will cover the ground. They probably aren't going to hold up particularly well to foot traffic like grass would.
Yeah, probably not. The vinca might, but the others not as much, no.
All right. Well, we are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It is Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. With me, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. DNR Forester Mark Vitosh is going to join us in just a moment. And of course, we are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Backcountry in Des Moines, a boutique that believes, as Twain said, travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness. Located at 2702 Beaver Avenue, Backcountry curates clothing and gear for people who travel in mind now and in person soon.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and joining us now, DNR Forester Mark Vitosh. Hello, Mark.
Good morning.
Thank you all so much for being here today. And we have so many people with questions already on the line. Let's dive right in. Carol is on the line in Des Moines. Hello, Carol.
Hi, Carol. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Perfect. So I have two gladioli questions. Number one, I'm sheltering at home and they're having fantastic sales on gladioli bulbs. Can I buy them and expect to bloom this summer? And number two, if they aren't hardy, but if I plant them really deeply, will they overwinter?
Richard?
Well, they typically take about 8 to 10 weeks to grow and then bloom once you plant them. So they might still bloom. But as far as being hardy, no, they're not going to be hardy.
All right. No matter how deep.
No matter how deep.
All right, Carol. Well, I hope you can take advantage of some of those sales. Thank you so much for calling. Julia is on the line next in Creston. Hello, Julia.
Hi. I renovated my strawberry bed this spring. I moved some old plants and moved some new plants. and I realized I probably mixed them all up. How do you tell strawberry types apart, the ever-bearing and the June-bearing? And I've got runners going all over the place in half of my beds. And do I cut the runners off? What do I do?
All right. Cindy, you want to tackle that one?
Sure. So I guess you can tell the different types by the time that they bloom. So June-bearing strawberries usually bloom in May and produce fruit in June. And the ever-bearing or the day neutrals continue to bloom throughout kind of the summer. So they kind of bloom sporadically. So you'll know soon if those you have a lot of June-bearing because they will stop blooming in a sense. What I would suggest, because you've done this renovation right now, is not worry about it. This first year, just let it reestablish. Don't expect a lot of fruit off of anything. Water and fertilize them well so that it fills in with the runners in the beds, in the places in the beds that you want it to fill in, so that you have a really nice crop next year.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Julia. 866-780-9100 is the number. Bob is on the line next in Carlisle. Hi, Bob.
Yes. Hello, Cindy. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question regarding crepe myrtles. And the one I'm particularly interested in is the Feely variety, the dwarf crepe myrtles. And I was told they're supposed to be hardy to zone 4. And the reason I guess why I'm concerned is I've got some other ones I've had for probably 25 years that are zone 5 and 6, and they've already broken bud and are quite tall already, but the other one does not seem to have been doing anything. But the only thing is I didn't plant it till last fall, so maybe is that maybe one of the reasons, just slower to show growth?
Cindy?
Yeah, so have you seen any, you haven't seen any new growth off of this Zone 4 one?
Not off that one, no.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, so that is a little bit concerning. They usually are a little bit later to emerge, and even these Zone 4, Zone 5 types, they don't get quite as big as the crepe myrtles in the south. But, yeah, if I hadn't seen any kind of sign or evidence of new growth by now, by the 4th of July, I would kind of dig around it to see if there's anything there. My guess is it did. Something happened over the winter, and it just didn't make it. So other things to think about besides just cold is it could have been too wet in that area. They don't typically like it really wet either. But if you've had some success with Zone 5 crepe myrtles, I applaud you because not everyone has success even with those. So it's you know how to make this happen, so I would give it a try again if you can. And if you can plant them in spring instead of fall, I think they might do just a little bit
maybe,
better for you.
So maybe try a little bit of root pruning around there as well, maybe to possibly stimulate the root system?
Well, if I would check it out first because I'm afraid it may not even be alive if you don't have any kind of growth right now. So doing some root pruning might not do much. But you can check and see if you've got any kind of firm roots in the area or if the base of the plant, if it's got a stem or some buds that are coming. But my guess is this is a do-over for you for next year on this particular crepe myrtle.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your advice.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Bob. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. It's not always good news.
I know, but I'm so excited he's growing crepe myrtles. That's great.
All right, so lots of positive reinforcement, but bad news. All right, Chris is on the line next in the Quad Cities. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I have a question. My neighbor's pool is very close to, like, our patio area, and the area gets part shade. Do you have any advice on, like, a tall grass or shrubs to create privacy?
All right, Richard, you want to tackle that?
Well, they could try an arborvitae. They will take part shade, and they're evergreen. And there are some cultivars that are very, very columnar, so they don't need a lot of space as far as width. So that would be a possibility. And some of these get to be like 6-8 foot tall. So they make a very effective screen.
All right, and they okay. do grow pretty quickly,
there's plenty
right?
of room.
Okay.
And it's will
they
grass?
Do good in an area that gets a lot of moisture?
Oh. Well, the concern is the water does contain chlorine. And
it's not water from the pool. It's just a low-level area that the rain settles in.
Okay. No, arborvitae typically do not like wet feet. They do not. You could put in maybe some ornamental grasses, like switchgrass, Indian grass. They can deal fairly well with the moisture. North wind is a switchgrass variety. It's very common. It's very, very columnar. It grows about 4 to 5 feet tall and is widely sold.
All right. Well, maybe that gives you some different ideas. Chris, thanks so much for your call. Let's go to email. And this one's a new one. All right. This emailer wants to remain anonymous. And he says, I am in a lawn battle with my neighbor. He has completely bought into the invasive grass propaganda, chemical usage, golf course look. He's been spraying my yard clandestinely after being asked specifically not to. This causes problems for my family and is dangerous. So how do I get revenge? I was thinking of ordering 10,000 dandelion seeds and seeding my lawn. I won't touch his, perhaps clover. I won't seed Creeping Charlie since it's an invasive species. Any ideas? He says, I have tried being kind, friendly, everything short of having my lawyer send a letter, so it's passive-aggressive time. Now, I know that you guys are not going to endorse any passive-aggressive behavior of that kind, but anybody have any ideas for how he can make peace with his neighbor, or at least protect his lawn from getting sprayed? And actually, Mark, I'm going to ask you, because I know that you have excellent relationships with your neighbors and your very natural-looking lawn.
They treat me nice. They put up with me. I would say build a fence. I can't think of anything else. If you had a solid fence, then they can't spray your yard and they can't enter your yard. So that's a toughie. I mean, I work with my neighbors. I do a lot of polling and stuff, and I do my best to make sure that anything in my yard does not invade their yard. So if I have a little bit of Creeping Charlie and things like that, those are in the back away from my edges. But I personally do not use chemicals myself, but I use a lot of on my knees and hoeing and other things to try. But I don't know what else to tell you.
All right. So maybe a fence is the best thing to plant in this case. It sounds like a really frustrating and difficult situation. All right. Here's another email. This one's from Sally. Maybe a little easier. I have an established small 5x5 foot raised bed of asparagus, but it looks like I need to add more soil and compost. When's the best time to add soil? Will the asparagus be okay with having an extra couple of inches soil to grow through? Also, it's developed a ground cover of white clover. Should I remove it? Isn't clover good for the soil? When should I remove it? Richard?
I would probably add the additional soil in the fall, and 1 or 2 inches should not be a problem whatsoever. Just make sure it's a nice, well-drained, fertile soil. As far as the clover, I'd probably remove it, but do it physically. Just dig it up, pull it out.
All right. From Marlene, this one's for you, Cindy. First question, is it okay to cut back the iris foliage after they're done blooming? Mine are especially large this year and crowding the plants next to them.
It is, but I would wait until later in the summer. That foliage is doing its job as far as photosynthesizing, and that plant to bloom better next year needs it to photosynthesize as much as possible. Usually by August, end of August, it's looking a little ratty, and if you want to remove it by then, it's probably not going to damage the plant. But wait a little bit longer.
All right, and her second question, several of my roses have leaves with large brown spots that cover most of the leaf. There is some green around it with a kind of lacy pattern. It doesn't make a hole. Is this an insect or a disease? Is there anything I can do?
Yeah, roses do have some issues with both insects and diseases. Initially, I thought maybe black spot. We have to know a little something more about the rose itself. If it's a hybrid tea rose, then black spot might be something that this could be. If it's not a hybrid tea rose and it's one of the hardier roses, hardier shrub roses, I might say to send in a picture of that to the Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic or to Richard at the Hortline. I'd want to see that picture first to make the distinction if it's a disease or maybe an insect.
I think I'll jump in right now because I don't think I need to see a photo.
Okay.
I think it's a rose slug, which is a worm-like insect, very, very common in the spring. And they basically eat the green tissue. And so what you have left is kind of like a very fine screen-like effect or sheet. You can see right through it. But they've come and gone. They don't cause much damage, but typically you're going to find these on the underside of the leaf, and they're small green-like worms, and they eat the green tissue.
So what you're saying, Richard, is they window pane the leaf.
Yes.
They
or skeletonize it, yes.
Yep.
Cool.
All right. Here's a question for you, Mark. This is from Mike. He says, our local energy company contracted to have trees trimmed. Yesterday, the tree company trimmed trees along our street, including mature oak and maple trees, along with other species. Is this the correct time of year to safely trim trees?
Other than oak, you're fine. A lot of that goes on. And what I might do is to give the company a call and just voice your concern about the oak. A lot of the companies work really hard. We actually get a notice every year from our utility company saying that they're going to come in the wintertime and prune the oaks separately. And sometimes, you know, depending on crews and stuff, they may miss a few trees. So it's often not intentional. So I would just maybe give them a call and say, hey, we know you can prune some of the other trees, but we have a few oaks in the neighborhood. Is there any way that in future scheduling that you can schedule for winter and just see if you can work with them?
All right. And if one of those trees was near the oak trees was near his property, he could still get out there and paint the wounds with a latex paint, right?
Well, if it happened within the last 48 hours, he could, but if it's been a week or so, it's probably not going to do him any good to paint it now. Usually, most of the research is showing that if they're going to become infected, it usually happens fairly quickly. So if it's been more than 48 hours, it probably won't help. If it just happened, yes. But okay. If it's been a couple days to a week, it probably won't do him any good to paint them at this point.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Linda is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Charity. I'm glad to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you. What's your question?
I enjoy your show. I've had a ground cover for years, and I love it. It's quite invasive, however. I just forget the name of it. It's about 6 inches tall, variegated leaves, red, green, white, with a white flower. And does anyone know what that name is? I've looked in my books and I can't figure it out.
All right.
Hello?
Cindy?
Oh. We know what it is.
Like, okay, you know.
Yeah. It sounds like chameleon plant. The minute you said red, there aren't too many ground covers that are aggressive that have red in the foliage. So it sounds like chameleon plant or Houtonia or Houtonia, and it likes kind of clay soils and can be very aggressive spreader. Mm-hmm. And it has an interesting fragrance.
Yes. Okay. Well, that is what it is, you know, and you just said a word. I used to call it Houtonia. And I have forgotten that word. How did you say the word?
I've heard it as Houtonia and Houtonia. So
okay.
It doesn't matter.
Well, you,
chameleon plant is a common name.
Well, thank you so much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Linda. Let's do an email question here before the break from Carol. I planted seedling trees last year. They're growing and bushing out from ground level like a bush. Am I to trim the tree as it grows upward, Mark?
what she wants to do is try to find a single stem and then eventually pick that out and try to develop a tree from there. She may have to fence it and protect it. But a lot of times if the top dies back, you'll get a lot of sprouts. So you try to pick the best. What I would do, though, even no matter what kind of species, I would wait till winter to prune to select those. I would kind of pick them out now, and then I would let all the energy go back into the root system, and then I would try to develop a tree out of it come this winter.
All right, and we'll see if we can slip this one in from Peg. I found a package of daffodil bulbs. They seem to be firm and in good shape. What do I do, plant now or wait till fall? Richard?
I would probably discard them.
All right.
That at this point, even though they may seem firm, they can't be stored for long periods, and at this point, they probably dried out and died.
All right, so they're planting them won't do you much good. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. With me this hour, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and DNR Forester Mark Vitosh. You can join with your plant and tree questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, DNR Forester Mark Vitosh, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at ISU. They are here to answer your questions about plants and trees. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Next up, let's go to Mark on the line in Urbandale. Hi, Mark.
Hi, thanks for your show. It's great. I got a question about vegetable gardening, and I've got a spot in the backyard that's getting increasingly shadier, and it's kind of part sun, part shade. Are there some things that would do better with less sun, or herbs or root vegetables or anything?
Well, you can grow certain things. Most plants need at least 6 hours of sun, like tomatoes and peppers,
sure,
and cucumbers and squash. You can grow some things like kale, spinach, lettuce, some of leafy vegetables. They don't need quite as much sun.
Does that help you out, Mark?
Good. Yeah, and related to it, I've got some chives. When's a good time after they flower? Can I just cut those back, and will they just keep coming back, or what's the best thing to do with chives?
You can cut them back if you wish. They'll come back. They're kind of hard to destroy, so... Don't worry about them.
Right. You can have
that's
plenty.
That's what I found. Will they do better, do okay in shade, too, a little bit less sun?
I think they'll be okay in part sun, not as full, maybe not as aggressive, but they'll be fine.
All right, Mark, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Joanne in Des Moines. Hi, Joanne.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a very, very large Dutch elm tree in my front yard. And it's very shady there. Hostas are the only thing that will grow in my front yard. And I have a hosta path. I've kind of lined my yard with hostas. And I want to finish off my path. I have like 4 or 5 feet left. And when I'm digging, I'm hitting the roots and I'm not of the tree, and I'm not able to dig there. How can I dig past the roots or into the roots?
Cindy?
I'm not sure you can dig into the roots per se. You can kind of dig around the roots. If you're digging into the roots, you're probably going to damage them. And maybe a little bit's not a big deal if it's just a few on the top.
I would avoid it at all possibility.
Yeah, yeah.
I've done that in my yard, Joanne. I've got hostas and stuff around an ash tree that's actually still alive at this point. But sometimes I move just 4 or 5 inches one direction, right. I can find a spot where I can get something planted.
I've tried that, and I'm not finding it.
If you can, sometimes you can find things that plants that are a little bit smaller, so they have smaller, so you don't need to dig quite as big a hole, and then they can kind of find their way as they kind of continue to grow and develop. So, yeah, it's a... Putting plants in with a root system that's as extensive as this one sounds like it is might be a little bit difficult, but starting maybe with smaller plants and then mulching to try and cover this up, because you're probably not going to win the battle with removing these roots without destroying the tree. And that's the whole reason for having a hosta garden.
I would avoid pruning any roots bigger than your pinky or ring finger.
That's a good guide.
I would also suggest there are certain hostas that actually do spread pretty aggressively.
Mm-hmm.
So that you could plant something and have it spread naturally, like hosta glossa. That does spread pretty aggressively.
You said hosta glossa?
Clausa.
Clausa.
C-L-A-U-S-A.
Okay, hosta clausa. So it can find its own holes.
Yes, it can
right.
do its thing.
All right.
And you can ask at a garden center for any kind of ground cover or ground cover type hosta, and they should be able to have some of those or refer you to some of those cultivars.
All right, Joanne, thank you so much for your call. 866-780-9100. I love the teamwork on that one. Even though we can't see each other anymore, we can still all work together. All right, Robert is on the line next in Davenport. Hello, Robert.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Thank you for taking my call. Love your show. Anyway, I have an ash tree that was just removed. Great big ash that was basically dying or dead. And I had it removed. It's on the south side of my house. I want to know the perfect tree that's great for Iowa, that's easy to take care of, to plant near where it was.
All right, Mark.
Well, Robert, there's no perfect tree. I've learned that in my few years of doing this. And the biggest thing is to look at, it sounds like you had a big ash tree there. So you need to really look at what your soil conditions are, what your soil drainage is, how much, kind of back to what Cindy started out with today, how much you're going to have full sun, pretty much 6 hours or more, and how much space that you have. There's a lot of possibilities if you have a lot of room and you've got good soils. I've always liked oaks. I like red oak. I like chinkapin oak, but they get big. Honey locust is another one that does okay. I get criticized, but I also like Kentucky coffee tree. You know, trees that fit big areas. So there's, in actually, there's some American elm selections that could be used. If, again, you have to decide what, how big a tree that you want. There are some smaller trees like Japanese tree lilac. There's hop hornbeam or hornbeam for medium-sized trees. So, again, I would really look at what you got available, and then I would look at some of the lists that are available and go online and really see what's going to fit your spot and what you would prefer, depending on do you want good fall color? Do you not want any fruit or seeds? So that would throw out the oaks. If we give you one tree, I can tell you in 5 years that tree may have a problem. So you really need to see what's going to fit your spot best.
Well, it is a big open spot. It's right in front of the house. It gets good sun. And that's why I want, you know, saying the perfect tree. Could you just give me a list of ones that you mentioned a little more slowly?
Yeah, sure. Some of the trees I would consider would be like red oak, chinkapin oak, honey locust, some of the newer selections of American elm. There's a good publication from Iowa State and some list online from Dr. Jeff Isles that lists some of the varieties.
All right. So hopefully that helps you out, Robert. And let's go next to Devin in Des Moines. Hello, Devin.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, my question is, I live on one of the ravines in Des Moines, and the previous owner did my backyard in grass, which is lovely, but it is extremely steep and very difficult to mow. So I don't want to take the grass out because I will have a huge erosion problem while I wait for something else to start growing. Is there something that I can plant that will take the grass over and be, keep the ground covered, and that I won't have to mow. It does get good sun.
Okay. You could maybe try bush honeysuckle, which Cindy mentioned
bush
previously.
Bush honeysuckle.
Because that is a low-growing shrub, but it also spreads pretty aggressively via roots. So it will spread and cover an area. It's native, does well. I have seen it in parking lots where they put it in the islands, and they fill it up quite nicely. So, and it can be grown in sun or part shade.
Okay. Along the interstate, sometimes you see, it almost looks like clover. I think it's called vetch. Would that be something that would work too?
Well, crown vetch, no. That's kind of considered an invasive weed. It has kind of a pinkish purple flower, and the DOT has stopped using that, so I wouldn't try to plant that, no.
Okay, nope. That's why I'm asking you all. Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the question, Devin. Next up, Larry in Ames. Hi, Larry.
Hi, how are you?
Good, what's your question?
I've got a question about, I've got a patio with some large pots, about 20 inch diameter, 20 inch tall, and I'm wondering if I can grow something in there like a daylily, some perennial, a daylily, possibly a German bearded iris, or some other suggestion you might have. Thank you.
All right, Cindy?
So you can. You can certainly grow. We do a lot of coral bells, maybe even some daylilies or some sedums in containers, and they'll look great for the summer. The problem with growing perennials in a container is either you're going to have to treat them like an annual and just dispose of them, or you're going to have a plan for how you're going to overwinter them. And that usually means planting them in the landscape or burying that pot in the landscape to make sure you're kind of protecting that root system so that it overwinters well and comes back for you next year. But we do use some perennials. I think the coral bells are the ones I see the most often, and maybe a coneflower or daylily or sedum in containers that work well. For a while, just they may not be reliably hardy in that container where it is on the patio year after year.
All right. Larry, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, let's go to Mary in Iowa City. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I have horsetail reed that is growing up through the ground cover, mostly sunny areas. It's spreading a little bit further than I want it to. I've read that the best thing to do is amend the soil because it likes not such fertile soil. It's not a really wet area at all. I've always thought of it as pretty well-drained, but it is pretty dense with ground cover. So I was wondering what you would recommend to see if I can get rid of some of it or, just kind of keep it at bay.
I think you're talking about equisetum.
Mm-hmm.
Which is that very narrow, round little stem that comes up. That is a very, very hard plant to eliminate or eradicate. I think I would just repeatedly dig it up as best I can, repeatedly.
Okay. Just keep digging at it then.
Digging at it. It's native to Iowa, and you'll see it in roadside ditches where it forms these very, very dense colonies.
It's pretty, in the areas that I've let it spread, it is pretty dense. It just sort of appeared probably 10 or 12 years ago, who knows how, a spore must have hit, and it's been great. I mean, I love it. It's so unusual and exotic looking, but it is starting to sort of move into my native wildflower area, and so I'll just keep digging it up. So that That's
yeah,
fine.
Keep
I'd
at it because it's very resilient. It's not going to give up easily, so just keep on doing it.
All right, Mary, thanks a lot for your call. Let's get through some email questions here as we run out of time. Cindy, this one I think sounds like it's for you from Susan.
Oh.
She says, can you smart people advise me? You're all smart people. This is not singling Cindy out on that front. Can you advise me on planting some, quote, walkables? I want to plant them in the cracks between my pavers on my patio, some that smell good when stepped on also.
Oh, yeah, so there's lots of steppables out there. They're actually called steppables that you can sometimes get at the garden center. And one that sounds perfect for Susan is thyme. Just a ground cover type thyme would be perfect because you can step on it, and then as you step on it, it's an herb and it smells great. So as long as it's in a sunny site that's kind of a well-drained soil, it will love it.
Okay, Richard, this one's from you, from Stephanie in Cedar Rapids. For a full to partial sun, south and east facing yard in Cedar Rapids, what sort of dense hedge would you recommend for use as a non-fence barrier to keep neighborhood dogs from wandering into the yard? A height of 2 to 3 feet would be ideal.
Ooh, 2 to 3 feet. That's kind of short. There are some dogwood cultivars that are shorter than normal. So that might be a choice.
How much sun was there?
It's a south and east facing, full to partial sun.
Would I have a really nice spirea, Richard, that grows about 3.5 feet?
Mm-hmm.
Clumps of those in a row. It's one of the golden varieties. Do you think something like that would work?
Yeah, spireas are basically indestructible for the most part.
Yep.
And the shorter ones are typically more in the 2 to 3 foot range.
Yep.
And they can have attractive foliage, and they can also have kind of pinkish, purplish flowers on them too.
All right.
Yep.
Sounds perfect.
I like mine. it does allow some cutting back and shaping. I mean, and with mine, you really don't have to hedge it. It'll stay at that 2 to 3 feet size.
Nice. Low maintenance. I like that. Cindy from Margaret in Shoeyville, I have some arugula seeds. Does it grow well in Iowa? When should I plant them, and can I sow them directly in the garden?
Yes, you can. They do grow pretty well in Iowa. Arugula is like most lettuce. It really prefers more the cooler weather, so we often plant them several times throughout the growing season. So, you know, April would have been a good time. May would have been a good time. July is usually a little hot. I might wait until August, mid-August, and kind of do some fall cropping of it. But you can certainly try it, and you can direct seed it in the ground. Just barely cover it up if you're going to cover it up at all, and then water it really well after sowing it to kind of get it up and germinating quickly.
All right. And last question from Jerry and Mary. And I have a large patch of raspberries. There are plenty of berries, but the leaves are turning yellow and the canes are dying nearing harvest. What could be causing this, and can anything be done about it? Richard.
I would assume that's disease related. So what I would do, as soon as the canes are done bearing, the summer bearing canes, remove them, cut them off the ground, get them out of there. So you have better air circulation. And then maybe next spring, as they prune, leave the bigger ones, remove the smaller ones. So again, you have better air circulation.
All right. Richard Giron, thank you.
You're welcome.
Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Cindy Haynes, thank you.
Thank you.
Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. And Mark Vitosh, thank you.
Always a pleasure.
Mark Vitosh, DNR Forester. We will be back with Horticulture Day again next Friday here on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Have a good weekend.